You're listening to Past and Present, the Colonial Williamsburg podcast. Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm Harmony Hunter. This year is the 75th anniversary of the 1936 restoration of one of the historic area's most popular buildings, the jail. It's a building that stands today on Nicholson Street, and when it was built, it set a new standard for prison architecture. With us now is architectural historian Carl Lounsbury, and he stopped by to tell us a bit more about the history of jails in the colonies. Thank you for being here with us today.
Pleasure, thank you.
Before we start talking about the architecture of jails, I think we need to briefly talk about the way that we understand jail today versus the way that jail was understood in the 17th and 18th centuries. And by that I mean, today we understand jail as a punishment in and of itself. But in the 17th and 18th centuries, it was more of a place where you waited for your punishment to be decided.
That's right, Harmony. The incarceration, being put away in a building away from everybody, was not a punishment in and of itself. It was, as you said at the beginning, it was just a way for people to secure prisoners before a trial began, or to put the prisoners back into the before they were the punishment was executed. They were the earliest jails were just simply buildings designated as jails, so they were not very purpose-built. They were just simply a dairy or a kitchen or just a house on a plantation that the sheriff owned.
Conditions really were terrible.
They were awful. They were miserable. If you can imagine, these were just rooms with, you know, if you're lucky, only you would be in there. But if you're unlucky, you could be stuck in a room that might be 9 by 12 or 10 by 15 with 3, 4, 5 other people. Who knows what kind of illnesses they may have brought with them. But once in there, these buildings were not clean very much. They didn't have window glass, and so it was cold. Most of the jails were unheated. Most of the criminal jails were unheated. And this made terrible conditions during the wintertime when it was very cold. Sometimes they gave them blankets. Sometimes they had to make do with what they could find.
So they have no sanitation, maybe a window if they're lucky.
But the window didn't have any glass in it, so the air just, what air there was. And then, of course, in the summertime, it was hot and fetid, and as you can imagine, it smelled terribly.
They started thinking about jails differently as time went on, as the 17th century progressed into the 18th century. What sort of changes begin to be made in the construction and the philosophy of jails?
I think they got tired of people breaking out of the flimsy constructed structures. In fact, some of the earliest jails were post-in-the-ground buildings, just like the simple post-in-ground structures that farmers built on their plantations. And they were covered with clapboards on the outside. But in between, there was nothing so that a really desperate criminal could just simply kick out the clapboards, slip through the studs, and make his escape. That happened several times. And so what they started doing is lining the interiors of these jails instead of having just the exposed framing and weatherboards on the outside. What they did was to put thick planks with big spikes, nail them to the studs, both on the floors, on the walls, and the ceilings. And they also put the studs closer together, 6 inches or so, so it's hard to squeeze through these things. But there were still clever ways to get out through windows. And again, as I said, because these prisons, people were not watching them 24 hours a day. If the prisoner had friends who wanted to help him out, they might come up at night, slip a few tools through the window, and they could, you know, saw their way out. And that happened over and over again.
And you had a great example of a guy who actually climbed up through the chimney of the jail he was in.
Yes, that was an infamous jailbird down in Norfolk who was in jail accused of a crime and waiting his trial. But he this jail actually had a chimney, and so he climbed up through the flue, got out, robbed a store, and then climbed back down. And they He said, well, you know, you can't accuse me because I've been in jail this whole time.
It's a perfect alibi.
That's right. I was in jail.
But now, it may seem like an obvious solution to these flimsy structures made of wood that people can just basically kick their way out of. Why were they built from wood and not something more substantial like brick?
Well, no one wanted to pay for it. This is tax money that you had to pay for it. So no one wanted to. Every time a public building was built, your taxes were raised that year. So if you, for example, built a new courthouse, you might be paying, say, £10 a year in taxes. But if they decide to build a new courthouse that was brick, your taxes might go up to £30 a year. So it's a substantial increase in how much you had to pay. And then it would go back down after 2 or 3 years. It wasn't sort of pegged to a certain your wealth level or the number of tithables you had. It was simply, you know, if they needed that much money that year, your taxes went up.
I want to actually quote you to yourself. You've written a book called The Courthouses of Early Virginia, and in it you lay out what becomes, I guess we should say, a proud history for Williamsburg and Virginia, because in Williamsburg, a prison is built that sets the standard for future prison construction. And let's see, you say, it was the construction of the public jail in Williamsburg in 1701 to 1703 that provided the model for prison architecture for the next generation of county prisons. How is what Williamsburg constructed, how does that become a model for future prisons? What are they doing differently at the Williamsburg jail that had not been done before?
Well, there's several things. One is it's made of brick, so it's more permanent material. It's harder to burn down. And I should say that many criminals had the tendency to escape by setting fire to their building that they're in. Sometimes they were lucky and got out in the confusion. Sometimes they burned up if they couldn't get out, and that happened a number of times. So brick was a permanent material. It was harder to get out of, not impossible, but harder. The other thing was that they created initially in the first construction by Henry Carey, the builder of the Capitol, who built the prison as well, they provided a cell for men and a cell for women. So the indiscriminate mixing of sexes and all the confusion that that might cause was mitigated to some extent. So that was an improvement. They also provided an exercise yard, an enclosed 10-foot-high wall, about 20 feet by 20 feet, which allowed prisoners to get out and get some exercise instead of being inside their cells. So that was a great improvement. And thirdly, or fourthly, they provided a space for a jailer that was attached to the prison, which meant that he could oversee any disturbances and keep an eye on these prisoners. So that was an improvement.
Well, the fun part about this story is that Williamsburg's jail is a facsimile of a building that you can see today. The Williamsburg jail was reconstructed in 1936. I want to talk a little bit about how we know what we know about that jail. Was that reconstructed by the architecture firm Perry Shawn Hepburn?
That's right, yes.
And they were the principal architects of the early days of the restoration.
That's right.
What did they base their reconstruction on?
Well, I start by saying that a fragment of the original building survived. After the provincial government left Williamsburg in 1780, the county, James City County, took over that building as its county jail. And it was changed around, but still in use through the early 19th century when it was replaced sometime in the middle of the 19th century. So that elements of it had survived. It was much battered and much changed. But that did give some indication of finishes, the brick materials, and patterning of the mortar joints and things like that. Archaeology then helped flesh out the story by excavating and finding where the debtor's prison was located, which was connected to the jail yard. Part of that jail yard had survived and been incorporated into the early 19th century county jail. And then they excavated in front of it and found that a wing had been added on to the provincial jail in 1722 to give more space for the debtors. And finally, the debtors got moved over in the 1720s to a heated space, which improved their life significantly. And the jailer added on to his space, which improved his domestic life significantly. And then they actually found evidence for another section that was added to the South in 1773, which was not reconstructed, but that was an addition to the jailer's house. So the jailer's house actually at the time of the Revolution was much larger than what you see today. So it was the archaeological evidence, the physical evidence that did survive of this much battered original structure, as well as documentary evidence. And they pull that together. They didn't do as much field work as we would do today to look at other jails to see what they looked like. And so some of the finishes that they had, they could have discovered in many early 19th century jails, which didn't change that much in terms of details, and have survived, and we've recorded those. And they did what they did.
We started out by talking about how jails are not just architectural structures, but an idea that changes. This is a standing structure, a lasting structure that is about our mistakes. What is special to you about jails as an architectural study?
Well, I mean, our investment in jails says something about our culture, because we often, as architectural historians, talk about the best buildings, which are usually fine gentry houses or fine public buildings. But it also tells something about that society of how they treated the poorest people, the miscreants, the troublesome people. And that, too, is part of our story. The ideal jail was one that you had to deal with segregation of sexes, segregation of criminals and debtors, as well as the segregation of blacks and white, because this is a racist culture that that existed in the 17th and 18th, 19th centuries. So the ideal jail might have six different rooms, but none of them ever did. So they had to compromise some ways or the other. And that's the fascinating. Were slaves thrown in with white women debtors? In the case in Richmond, we know that was in fact the case. So, it's an interesting issue that because the delicacies that you see everywhere else enacted in the landscape somehow break down in the jail. This is where you can see how society doesn't work and how people deal with the frailties of our human existence.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And we want to encourage all of our listeners to stop by and visit the jail and all of the reconstructed and original buildings in Colonial Williamsburg's historic area. To support the podcast and Colonial Williamsburg programs, visit history.org/donate. We love hearing from you. Visit history.org/podcasts and click comment at the top of the page to drop us a line.